This program is brought to you by the Genesis Communications Network, a world leader in talk radio since 1998. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Welcome to the Corlin Economics Report, a weekly look at financial and political topics relating to asset-based investing. Guests on this program pay no fees to appear, and guests and hosts disclose any equity interest in companies' profile. Now, the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey, everyone. Welcome in to the weekend edition of the KE Report. My name is Corey Fleck, and I'm your host for the weekend show. Also your host throughout the week at our website, kereport.com, and on our podcast, Corlin Economics Report. I commentate and, well, update everybody on market moves as well as company updates. And it was another busy week, especially on the company update front. Please, everybody, keep those emails coming, fleck@kereport.com. I'm kicking off this weekend show with a new guest to the actual weekend show. His name is Steve Penny. He is the publisher of The Silver Chartist. I've had Steve on for the last about month now, and I'm very impressed with his outlook on the markets, especially precious metals, balancing a lot of technicals with some of the fundamentals, as well as what he shares with his subscribers, some of the stocks that he is trading into and out of. We're going to get into the stocks a little bit later, but let's start off with the general precious metals here and gold. Steve, you and I were chatting off mic, and you were outlining to me this more or less triangle pattern that is forming in gold that really looks like it's coming to a point in the near term. So that means a decision needs to be made for gold, whether it's going to have a leg higher or maybe have another leg lower. Break down this triangle pattern that you are following closely here, please, Steve.
Yeah, you bet, Corey. And thanks again for inviting me on. It's always great to come on and visit with you and speak to your audience. But yeah, a lot of us have been so zeroed in on this 7-month downtrend channel, which is really pretty obvious, dating back to August of 2020. And I recently noticed this uptrend line that dates all the way back to May of 2019. And that trend line was tapped last year in March of 2020 during those lows. Then we came back in the early part of this month and tapped that trend line again. And then if you draw a downtrend from the recent high in January, we've got a triangle pattern, a symmetrical triangle pattern that's forming right now. We're approaching the apex of that triangle, and that typically precedes a fairly sharp move in one direction or the other. Now, patterns like this tend to break in the direction of the prevailing trend, but what makes this especially hard to perhaps decipher is that you can make a case that we're in a downtrend or an uptrend here, depending on your time frame. So this really could go either way. I've got a slight bias to the upside, but to come back down and retest the recent lows would not surprise me at all either.
Now, when does this triangle formation actually come to an end? Because usually we get a break a little bit before that, but what I'm seeing on the chart is it's actually quite soon.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, we could get a break at any point, but the apex will be reached that first week of April.
What are you expecting then, Steve, or what are you going to be watching to give you a little heads up as to which way gold might move?
Well, right now I'm looking at it. It's hugging the upper rail of that triangle pattern, and it's threatening to break out. It's, in fact, a couple days this week, it's poked its head above it and then fallen back down. So if we get a break above, there's your confirmation. And, of course, you would look for a weekly and then a monthly close above that resistance line, and that would give you confirmation. But, you know, another thing everyone's been talking about, and rightfully so, is the cup and handle pattern on gold when you zoom out to the 10 or 11 year monthly chart. And it does look like we're starting to carve out a handle to go along with that cup. And, you know, I've been thinking about this lately. You know, when are we going to get back to new highs? That's what everyone wants to know, right? Or when are we going to get to this $2,400, $2,500 plus gold? And, you know, it's certainly possible that we really get there sooner than anyone thinks. However, I think the most likely scenario would be to carve out a symmetrical handle. So what I mean by that is it's taken 7 months for us to carve out this downtrend. Now, what I would look for is for us to kind of chop sideways here for maybe a couple weeks. And then if we were to bottom to get a symmetrical handle pattern, it would take another 7 months to match the 7 months downtrend. And that would put us up near new highs towards the very end of this year. And I think that's a good baseline. I don't even want to say assumption, but that's something to look for.
Okay. So do you think that's going to happen? Because you're right. That's what everyone's wondering. When is gold going to get back to those new highs? And I know some of the newer investors into the sector is saying, is this actually a top that we just saw? And are we ever going to get back to new highs?
Yeah, I mean, that's my baseline assumption. But, you know, as a technical analyst, you always react to new information as it comes in. But, yeah, that's basically what I'm looking to happen over the remainder of this year.
Let's talk about silver now, Steve, because silver has been a bit more volatile than gold, which is normal for silver, but one of the aspects of the gold bugs have been holding on to is that silver had been performing better than gold. You look at its last 7 months, and it's traded very much in a range, not in a downtrend like gold had. However, recently we have seen a little bit more weakness come into silver. Really looks like silver's trading more off its industrial uses, almost more in line with some of the base metals. How are you viewing silver and some of this short-term weakness that we've seen?
Yeah, I agree 100%. Silver has held up much better than gold. In fact, over the past 7 months, silver has outperformed gold by almost a factor of two. That gold-to-silver ratio was up near 123 in March of last year, and it got down to a low of about 65. So it's almost outperformed by a factor of two. And, you know, I think the industrial element is a big part of it, but there's also, I mean, you could almost say record, all-time record demand for investment demand. We're seeing shortages right now at mints around the world. So I think that's a big part of it. The world is waking up to investment as a attractive option for investing. And what I'm looking at on the chart here is the 200-day moving average. We're sitting just above that. And then we're sitting just above the low that was marked in the early part of March of $24.84. So I'm looking and hoping, to be honest, for those two support levels to hold.
Let's also talk about the gold-silver ratio. It's not something I've talked about too much recently, but there's been a drastic change in the way gold and silver have reacted. During this last, let's say, year of trading, the gold-silver ratio right now is under 70, when for most of last year it was above, let's say, 80, even spiked up during that March washout to 127. That's an extreme level, but you can also make the argument that being below 70 is actually a fairly low level. So gold is maybe underpriced compared to silver.
Yeah, you can make that case. So I'm looking right now at a gold-silver ratio chart going back to 1980, so just over 40 years, and it's actually just in the middle right now of this 40-year range. And back in 2011, we bottomed at 33-1, and anytime you get below 45-1, those tend to be short-lived. A lot of people talk about the 15-1 gold-silver ratio that was reached in 1980. While I do expect that to be reached again in the fullness of time, you know, that's very likely to be some kind of a spike. So, personally, once we get below a ratio of roughly 50-1, I start looking more towards gold-related investments as opposed to silver. But I think silver's got some, I do expect silver to outperform gold over the intermediate term here to long term.
Do you find that viewing at least some of these moves over the last year, especially when you pull up something like a monthly chart for this gold-silver ratio, it's been an absolute mess, in all fairness, over the last year. We have massive gaps. The price for both of these metals has been all over the place. So do we just need a bit more of a settle down in terms of this crazy volatility we've had?
Yeah, and like I said, silver has outperformed gold. Its outperformance has been really fast. So looking at the chart, you know, it's on that ratio is oversold. So I would look for a little bit of a reversion in that ratio, and that can happen one of three ways. And I'm talking about in the short term here. Like I said, longer term, I'm more bullish on silver. However, over the short term, we can look for gold to outperform, and that can happen one of three ways. Silver can continue to chop sideways, and gold kind of catches up a little bit. Both metals can move higher. It just gold might move higher faster in the short term. Yeah, and then the third way, which I don't expect, would be that both metals fall, it's just that silver would fall more. So that's one of three ways that gold-silver ratio could kind of alleviate that oversold condition on the RSI.
Hey, Steve, we're going to wrap it up here. I really appreciate you spending the last few segments with us in terms of daily editorials, and that's one of the reasons why I did want to feature you on the weekend show. If anybody wants more information on Steve's Silver Chartist, please email me, fleck@kereport.com. I'll put you in touch with Steve. Thank you again for joining us on this weekend show. Have a great rest of your weekend.
You too. Thank you so much.
Al Corlin's firm, A.B. Corlin and Associates Incorporated, provides consulting services to public companies on matters of regulatory compliance. To find out more, follow the link from www.kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back after this brief timeout.
You are listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Are you afraid to go to the mailbox because of letter after letter from the IRS? Are they stacking on more and more penalties and interest? By now, you know the problem won't go away on its own. Don't let the IRS chase you to your grave with penalties and interest and liens and levies. You need real help now. I'm Dan Pilla. I wrote the book on tax debt settlement, and I help thousands of people solve tax problems they thought couldn't be solved. I can help you too. Call 800-34-NO-TAX or go to my website, danpilla.com. That's danpilla.com. Danpilla.com.
I tried other brands, but I came back to my sunshine.
For the best hot or cold pain relief, get the best. Get a Sunny Bay heating pad.
Sometimes life can be a pain in the neck, or back, or shoulder.
And the best relief for that pain is a Sunny Bay heating pad. Did you know that the American College of Physicians said that one of the best ways to treat muscle pain is heat therapy? Sunny Bay heating pads are handmade with high quality, can be used at home or at work, and have a lifetime 100% positive rating on both Amazon and Etsy.
Why take another pill?
Many people use our Sunny Bay heating pads alone and got rid of the neck pain.
Long distance travel or long hours in front of a computer can take its toll on your body.
Our homegrown small business tries to help people just like us. That's why we design and test our handmade products with great care before we introduce them to the public. You can easily find Sunny Bay heating pads on Amazon. Just go to Amazon.com and search for Sunny Bay heating pads.
Do you want to give you and your loved ones premium nutrition right now? Hi, I'm Jamel Bookaboo from TeamG'day.com and the GCN Longevity Health Team. Get your premium nutrition formulated by world-renowned naturopathic doctor, Dr. Joel Wallach at wholesale, or also become a distributor and earn income while supporting this broadcast. Go to TeamG'day.com via the shopping cart or contact form, and I'll get back to you with support personally. That's TeamG'day.com with Longevity. TeamG'day.com.
Hi, I'm Dr. Joel Wallach, the Dead Doctors Don't Lie guy. There's no reason why you shouldn't live to be at least 100 and have a great time getting there. And I'm going to give you a free copy of my lecture that tells you exactly how to do it. In fact, after you've lived a long and healthy life, there should be only two documents in your medical chart, a birth certificate and a death certificate. I'm Dr. Wallach with a warning. If you have a 4-inch medical chart, if you take prescription drugs for high cholesterol, high blood pressure, arthritis, joint pains, and other health issues, the medical profession is failing you. They're using you for an ATM machine. My free lecture is going to reveal what pharmaceutical companies don't want you to know. There's been groundbreaking research and discoveries on how to effectively treat or eliminate over 900 different diseases naturally. It's all in my free lecture called Deadly Recipe. So call toll-free 1-855-79-YOUNG. Again, that's toll-free 1-855-79-YOUNG. 1-855-79-YOUNG.
Tehebo Tea Club's original Pure Pound de Arco Super Tea helps build the red corpuscles in the blood which carry oxygen to our organs and cells. Our organs and cells need oxygen to regenerate themselves. The immune system needs oxygen to develop, and cancer dies in oxygen. So the tea is great for healthy people, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening disease due to an infection, diabetes, or cancer. A one-pound package of tea is $34.95 plus shipping. To order, please visit shopsupertea.com. That's shop, S-H-O-P, super, S-U-P-E-R, T-T-E-A, .com. So the complete website is shopsupertea.com, or call us at 818-984-6100, Monday through Saturday, 9 to 5 California time. That's shopsupertea.com at 818-984-6100.
Your weekly fix on finance and investing. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
All right, welcome back. Continuing to listen to the weekend edition of the KE Report. I'm going to stick to more resource investing, but in a broad sense. I'm chatting now with Brian Lenny, founder and editor of the Junior Stock Review website and the Premium Newsletter. Brian, you and I were chatting off mic here for quite a while, talking about looking at share structure and looking at advisors to companies. We hear a lot about companies promoting the fact that they have these strategic investors or large institutions, usually bigger companies, that hold a somewhat significant portion of shares. Sometimes it's only 5%, sometimes it's up to 19% of the company. But one thing we need to understand is that not all strategic investors are the same. There's a number of different aspects to analyze when it comes to A, how these strategic investors built their position, and B, I think even more importantly, how active they are with this smaller company. Brian, let's start off there. When you're looking at strategic investors and you're diving into the company, when it comes to how closely they're related and how they're working together, what are some of the keys that you look for?
Thanks for having me, Corey. So for me, you know, it always depends. It depends on what type of company it is. So, let's say it's exploration, and you want to gauge the impact of strategic a shareholder, whether that be an institution, maybe a singular investor, maybe like an Eric Sprott, or let's say another, like a senior mining company or another mining company that's taken an interest. For me, I think there's a number of questions you want to look at. You know, how recent is this strategic position taken? Is it in the financing that's really recent? You know, they've taken, you know, 10% of the company, or was this something that they acquired through, you know, an option deal 2 years ago, or was this shares that they bought in a private placement 2 or 3 years ago? And if they did, have they maintained their percentage? Have they maintained 10%, meaning any private placement that's happened since then, they've put in enough to maintain their percentage and not get diluted down? I think that's one of the things that you want to take a look at and give you some relevance on how that company views the potential in that junior that they've taken a position in. From more so on a strategic side, you know, you can see, you know, the singular investors. I will use an example for this that I have no connection to the company at all, but I did meetings with them. There's a company called Northern Superior, and Michael Gentile is a strategic shareholder there, and he actually participated in the meetings at this PDAC one-on-one conference, and I thought that was pretty interesting. You know, obviously this guy not only owns 16% of the company, but he's participating in the one-on-one meetings, meaning that he does have a lot of you know, he's putting his money where his mouth is in his position, but he's also working on the day-to-day operations with the company and using his network connections and what he knows about investing to help promote the company. So I think that was, to me, that was a really good sign on that company. Now, I'm not invested in Northern Superior, but I like to see that strategic shareholder actually meant something. And you can parlay that into companies too. You know, are they involved in a technical advisory committee? Does that technical advisory committee cost anything to the company? Or is it just there to make decisions on where the company is doing their generative work? You know, how they're going to focus targeting for a drill program and such. And so I think those are a couple of the ways that you can kind of gauge the impact of a strategic shareholder.
All of those are good examples, and touching on your initial point there, how they built their position. That's also critical, because sometimes these shareholders or institutions that are being marketed built their position through either offloading a project or, in essence, not actually paying for their position through financings and maintaining their position. That's the key to consider. When you're looking at these strategic investors, though, Brian, are you wanting to see them as simply investors or possible acquirers? Very different take there.
You know, it depends on who it is. And I think it depends on their track record, too. You know, there's some guys. Let's use Eric Sprott. You know, I think it's a really good example, because people get really hot and heavy when they see Eric Sprott's name as a strategic shareholder, which I think, you know, partially is – is something that, you know, that means something. But on the other side, he's in so many different companies that, you know, he spreads his money around so that he can hit those winners. And, you know, his strategy doesn't necessarily fit the general retail investor. So you have to be very careful with using a guy like Eric Sprott as a gauge to if you should go into a company or not. And then some of these other guys, you know, you do have to gauge their track record. And I'll use a couple of examples that I used in my recent newsletter when I was talking about this. In terms of senior mining companies, someone like Kinross, you know, their track record, in my view, hasn't been that great in terms of joint ventures that they've done. And I've seen more failures than successes. And so if Kinross is the major company that's taken the joint venture with Junior that I'm looking at, I'm a little more skeptical on possibly how that company views the joint venture deal and if I should put any weighting towards it. Now, that's just my view. People can view that differently. But I think that's part of the thing you need to do is look at that whoever that strategic investor is and look at their track record and then parlay that into what that could actually mean to the company. And, you know, for senior mining companies, I like to see them take a technical role. For, you know, large investors, obviously, they're there to participate with their money. And that's like Eric Sprott. It looks like a guy like Michael Gentile does more than just contribute his money. It looks like he's right involved with the companies, and I think that's good too. But again, it always depends. Depends on who that strategic is and what they bring to the table as a strategic investor.
Let's also talk about joint ventures, because this ties into this conversation. And joint ventures, they can come in many different forms, usually in a staged payment form. So I really think you do need to pay attention to how those payments are staged, but also when it comes to who's running the actual exploration program. Do you have a preference when you see a major teamed up with a junior? Does it depend to you who runs that actual exploration program?
Yeah. Again, it's another one of those, it depends. I'll use an example. Kenorland, they're the operator for their joint venture with Sumitomo. I'm very comfortable. In fact, I like that they are the operator on, Renault, and, I'm hyper confident in them as a management team and their ability to execute on an exploration program. Now, if the team was different, you know, if technical expertise or acumen wasn't their strength, which I think in Kenorland's, position it is, I would rather the senior mining company be the operator and the one that's doing everything when it comes to, you know, executing on the exploration program. So again, it's one of those things that you need, it's a case by case basis. And then obviously I think people should always be playing to their skill set. And if technical is your skill set, then I think you should be driving the bus.
All right, Brian, we're wrapping it up there. Great chatting with you. Very interesting discussion. I hope this cleared up for all you investors out there, at least makes you focus a little bit more on some of these strategic investors and not just take the company's word from it saying, oh, they're a strategic investor, and that's a good thing. Brian, great chatting with you on this weekend show. I'll chat with you again next week. I hope you have a great rest of your weekend.
Thanks for having me, Corey.
To find out more about today's guests, visit us on the web at www.kereport.com. You're listening to the Corlin Economics Report. We'll be back in a moment.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNlive.com today.
I tried other brands, but I came back to my sunshine.
For the best hot or cold pain relief, get the best. Get a Sunny Bay heating pad.
Sometimes life can be a pain in the neck or back or shoulder.
And the best relief for that pain is a Sunny Bay heating pad. Did you know that the American College of Physicians said that one of the best ways to treat muscle pain is heat therapy? Sunny Bay heating pads are handmade with high quality, can be used at home or at work, and have a lifetime 100% positive rating on both Amazon and Etsy.
Why take another pill?
Many people use our Sunny Bay heating pads alone and got rid of the neck pain.
Long distance travel or long hours in front of a computer can take its toll on your body.
Our homegrown small business tries to help people just like us. That's why we design and test our handmade products with great care before we introduce them to the public. You can easily find Sunny Bay heating pads on Amazon. Just go to Amazon.com and search for Sunny Bay heating pads.
U.S.
USA Radio News with Mike Fortier.
Justice will not be swift for the Colorado shooting suspect. Boulder County District Attorney Michael Daugherty saying yesterday that the trial of Ahmad Elisa will likely take at least a year. Daugherty also giving an update on the investigation.
The investigation is progressing rapidly. All the agencies involved and committed to ensuring justice is done have been working incredibly hard day and night, as they will throughout the weekend, to make sure that all the information that can be learned about the shooter, the victims, the witnesses, King Supers, any connection between all of those becomes known.
The 21-year-old Elisa charged with 10 counts of first-degree murder for Monday's shooting at a Boulder grocery store. More charges pending. The U.S. Navy to help remove a container ship stuck in the Suez Canal. The Pentagon says Egypt wants to lead the removal operation, but the Navy stands ready to assist in any way. This is USA Radio News. All students could be back in classrooms by the end of the year. Education Secretary Miguel Cardona said this week his goal is for 100% of schools to offer in-person learning as soon as this fall.
You know, the goal really is to provide in-person learning options for as many students as possible, as quickly as possible, and as safely as possible. And we know we can do it. There are examples across the country where it can be done. And that is our goal. Pre-K through 8, definitely, but we're not leaving out our high schoolers who also need to be a part of that school community and engage with their peers and their teachers.
Cardona and Navy seized the view yesterday. He also says it will not be mandatory for everyone to be vaccinated before re-entering schools. Three more states, Kansas, Minnesota, and South Carolina, announcing yesterday they'll allow residents 16 and older to get vaccinated next week. Meanwhile, concerns are growing that the U.S. could have a surplus of COVID vaccine doses by the middle of May. The number of doses the White House has asked manufacturers for is about 70 million more than the U.S. population. This is USA Radio News.
Now, with orders to stay at home, public health concerns, the reality of illness due to pathogens and viruses, your health is at an all-time high risk. That's why it's critical to take a proactive approach to boost your immune system. You can with new nano-colloidal silver from Americare. Our patented process with tiny silver particles, 1/100th the size of a red blood cell, allows for maximum body absorption. Americare's nano-colloidal silver effectively disinfects your body internally, attacking pathogens and viruses while supercharging your immune system. Colloidal silver is antibacterial and antiviral. Simply put, it prohibits bacterial respiration, suffocating viral cells, preventing the virus from replicating. And now, due to public health concern, Americare is authorized to offer our lowest and best price ever, around $1 a day, but supplies are limited. Purchase nanocolloidal silver now at immunesupportnow.com. That's immunesupportnow.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Supplies are limited.
Providing unique reporting on markets and companies since 1990. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
All right, welcome back. Continuing to listen to the weekend edition of the KE Report. Those first two segments, I did spend a bit more time on the resource sector. So in the final two segments, I'm going to shift focus a little bit more and talk broad markets. It's something I've been talking a lot about this week simply because, well, precious metals, they're in a downtrend, continuing in that downtrend. But the broad markets are also very interesting. I am chatting right now with Dana Lyons, fund manager based out of Chicago. Dana, one of the, I guess, biggest changes over the last couple of weeks when it comes to the broad averages is we are seeing a bit more choppiness. We have the S&P a little bit off of its highs. The NASDAQ is still a fair bit off of its highs when you compare it to some of the other markets. The Russell 2000, the small caps, those are still doing quite well. But it's not this, I guess, kind of boring market that just continues to trend higher, like we had seen really ever since the election. How does this impact the way that you're managing your portfolios in this market?
Right. I think that's a fair assessment, Corey, because as you mentioned, after the election, you had pretty much a sweet spot of in terms of market action, market conditions, and we called it, you know, as we talked several times, probably the best trading environment that I've seen in my career, many, many decades. So Or if that was easy money, you know, the 3 months after the election, as we talked about maybe starting a month ago or so, we're in a period where it's, the money's going to be a little bit harder to come by. So it doesn't mean, as we've spoken about, that we see any indications of a major top, the risk of a major top or the risk of a major bear market starting anytime soon. But like I said, the easy money is over, and I think over the last, you know, 4 to 6 weeks has been evidence of that. So as far as our handling of that type of environment, we call it a two-way environment, so it's not just straight up. Our tactics have been a little bit more active, not just buying the dips, but also selling the rips and the resistance, even putting on hedges into resistance as well. And also on the downside, not buying the slightest of dips, you know, but being a little bit more patient in considering that prices might certainly move down to more substantial, lower support levels before, and it might be more prudent, more wise to be patient and waiting for those lower prices at this point. So we've been a little bit more active in the range and what we've been buying and where we've been buying it. And again, probably had more hedges on recently than we have in quite some time.
So you're putting on hedges, but you're not necessarily cleaning out any of your long positions. Does that mean, or if you could summarize your, I guess, general outlook, are you bearish? Are you bullish? Are you more neutral?
In the short term, neutral. Our risk model, which is an intermediate term risk model, is in a bearish position, has been since shifting south about 3 weeks ago. But our read of that signal right now, like I said, is not, it's not likely to be indicative of a major top or a major bear market, impending bear market here. More or less, probably, you know, many of the components within our model got extremely overbought, extremely extended, and it's more or less just gravity pulling it down a little bit. It's what we talk about sometimes as a good overbought reading. It's just a sign of kind of like a thrust in terms of whether it's breath or you're talking about momentum. It's a good initial thrust higher. But that has to be worked off, reset for some time before you can refuel and set yourself up for another leg up. So I think that's what we're doing right now in this two-way market, kind of refueling, resetting some of the sentiment levels that got pretty excessive and putting the market back into a position eventually where we think we see more new highs in the intermediate term.
So it is kind of that general, I guess, sentiment, more or less correction that you're waiting for, not necessarily price, where price can move sideways in a choppy nature, and sentiment and some of the technical indicators that were at overbought levels have their time to work back to some more normal levels to set up for another run higher. Let's also talk about the VIX, too, because the volatility that we have seen in the market, when you look at the VIX has been relatively boring. It's right around that 20 level. In all fairness, it's not nearly as low as it was 2, 3, 4 years ago when it was dropping into single digits. But the VIX has also been showing that, I guess, traders aren't that worried about a major market pullback right now. However, the VIX, again, is at generally higher levels than it was a couple years ago. So how are you viewing the VIX in this market perception?
Yeah, so volatility has been extremely subdued, like you said. Sometimes, like I mentioned before, sometimes when you get a spike up, it could be a good buy signal. When you get a rush of fear into the market, it could be a nice short-term, more clear buy signal. We haven't gotten that, so we haven't seen, in terms of the volatility indices, a good all clear sign in terms of a buy signal there. But we've seen in other areas, we've seen signs of complacency coming off and some of the bullish sentiment starting to subside a little bit. So I think actually the VIX, the volatility indices, not just on the S&P, but the Russell as well as the NASDAQ 100, the fact that it has remained subdued is actually a fairly bullish sign for us in the sense that it's maintained this level basically over the last 12 months, and it keeps pounding against those support levels in the VIX around that 20 level, I think it's got a chance, and this could be a real bullish catalyst for stocks eventually here, at least for a while, if we can break down decisively below those that 20 level and below those lows on those other volatility indices. I think it could be a bullish catalyst for stocks and actually a nice little tailwind for stocks. So complacency certainly got too high and certainly can come down a little bit more, but I think the volatility indices remaining low isn't necessarily a warning sign at this point.
Let's also talk about the U.S. dollar, because the U.S. dollar, I feel like under the radar, has been rising this whole year. It bottomed pretty much at the very beginning of this year at 89.17, and as we're recording this later in the day on Thursday, making a run higher, trading just under that 93 level. So that's a fairly big move for a currency, especially the U.S. dollar. However, we do need to consider that back in late March of last year, it was 103 on the dollar index. So a lot of volatility in the dollar. What's your assessment of this dollar's rebound? Has it put in a bottom, or is this just more or less a bounce in a downtrend?
Yeah, in our assessment so far, there's nothing to prove that, you know, we're shifting out of the downtrend that it's been in for, you know, over a year now, like you mentioned. There might be rounding out and entering some sort of a trading range, or maybe it is putting in, you know, a basing pattern to reverse higher. In our view, the pace of advance has not been such that it's convincing to us that we're moving back higher. So until proven otherwise, we are selling the dollar into rallies resistance. We actually just shorted it yesterday. A decisive move up here, a decisive close up here towards that 93 level would probably prove us wrong here in the near term, and we probably wouldn't wait around for that, for a reversal there. But that said, if we do get a swift reversal back below, say, that 92.60-ish level, 92.75 level, we could have a false breakout here and set the stage for the next leg lower in the dollar. So I think basically the long story short is the benefit of the doubt is still to the downside in the intermediate term in the dollar until proven otherwise. And it very well might prove us otherwise, but for now, you know, we're selling the rips.
Perfect, Dana. Nice chatting with you, buddy. I appreciate that general assessment of the markets, the dollar, and crude. I'll be chatting with you again in another couple weeks, but we definitely have seen a bit more volatility creep into these markets, but again, you're still not taking that more bearish outlook. Dana, thanks for your time. I hope you have a great rest of your weekend.
Thanks, Corey. Always a pleasure.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNlive.com today.
Frustrated trying to get business capital? Want to take the slow process and rejection out of the equation? GCNloans.com removes the slow, irritating approval process. Instead, get quick, simple funding. Powered by David Allen Capital, 80% of our pre-qualified clients are approved in days. Pre-qualify at GCNloans.com and get your money this week. It's that easy. GCNloans.com. That's GCNloans.com.
The old way of living with diabetes is a pain. You've got to remember to do your testing, and you always need to be sticking your fingers. The new way to live your life with diabetes is with a continuous glucose monitor. You simply apply a discreet, easy-to-use sensor on your body, and it continuously monitors your glucose levels, helping you spend more time in range and freeing you from painful finger pricks. If you test your blood sugar at least 4 times per day and inject insulin at least 3 times per day, or use an insulin pump and have private insurance or Medicare, you might be eligible for a CGM with little or no cost to you. Call U.S. Medical Supply today for a free benefits check. We offer free shipping, 90-day supplies, and we bill Medicare or your insurance directly. Call now and say goodbye to finger pricks.
800-880-1896. 800-880-1896. 800-880-1896. That's 800-880-1896.
Silver has always been nature's very own antibiotic, and only one system allows you to generate an endless supply of natural silver solutions. SilverLungs.com. You'll find no wild claims or pseudoscience, just a lifetime of nano-sized pure silver solutions. The Silver Lungs generator allows you to make your own, so stop paying for silver solutions. The unique lung delivery system targets respiratory infections where other silver solutions simply cannot reach. See the Silver Lungs generator and lung delivery system at SilverLungs.com. That's SilverLungs.com.
I'm Ben Utek. I played high school, college, and pro football, helping my team win the 2006 championship. It was an amazing day, but it can't compare to the joy I feel every day with my loving wife and three beautiful daughters. My football career ended after I suffered my fifth concussion. Did you know that over a million athletes suffer a concussion each year? That includes boys and girls, every age, every type and level of sport. It isn't always clear that a player has had a concussion, so parents, athletes, and coaches need to learn about concussion signs and symptoms. The American Academy of Neurology recommends athletes thought to have a concussion be immediately removed from play and not returned until assessed by a healthcare professional trained in concussion. This isn't just about sports. It's about your brain. When in doubt, sit it out. Learn more at AAN.com/concussion. That's AAN.com/concussion. A message from the American Academy of Neurology.
Jake was in big trouble with the IRS. He owed how much?
$92,000.
Ouch. The IRS left no room for Jake to breathe.
They put a lien on my house, took all the money out of my bank account, took money out of my paychecks. So it was a nightmare.
He needed help fast.
I figured that all these companies were the same until I called Federal Tax Management. You could just tell they knew what they were talking about. Right then and there, I felt like I had some hope.
Stop the liens, levies, and garnishments fast and qualify for one of several special IRS programs that could reduce or even eliminate your tax debt. So, how'd it go for Jake?
They did what they said they would do. They came through for me. I ended up saving an unbelievable amount. I was so jazzed. I was extremely happy.
If you owe more than $10,000 in back taxes, take Jake's advice.
Give Federal Tax Management a phone call. If they help me, they can help anybody.
Call the Federal Tax Management Hotline now. 800-503-8625. 800-503-8625. 800-503-8625.
Alright, welcome back here to wrap up the weekend edition of the KE Report. We are going to focus more on the currency markets as I am chatting with Mark Chandler. He is a managing partner at Bannockburn Global Forex, also writes the Mark to Market blog. Now, Mark, when it comes to the U.S. dollar, I really feel like under the radar, the dollar has been moving up all year. No one is paying that much attention to it, and fair enough. You know, the dollar is still not at these, like, astronomical levels that we can say it was a year ago, well over 100 on the dollar index. But to start this year, the dollar right around 89, and now it's challenging that 93 level. You and I were chatting off mic, and the extent of these dollar moves against a wide range of currencies definitely needs to be noted. Can you break down some of the outperformance that we've seen in the dollar compared to other currencies, please?
Sure. So maybe the place to begin is just thinking about what's happened this past week. The dollar has made new highs for the year, first quarter, against the euro, the yen, so those are the two big currencies, Swiss franc, Swedish krona, the Aussie, kiwi, but also made new highs for the year against the Chinese currency. So this is really the major currencies right here, leaving aside the Canadian dollar and the British pound. So I'd say you're right. The dollar hasn't gotten a lot of fanfare, a lot of attention. Maybe that's been taken up by the equity markets, but the dollar has really it's really defied a lot of people's expectations. People like myself, I think, bearish the dollar coming into this year, and it had to adjust as the dollar has basically been trending higher since the since like the 3rd or 4th of January.
Mark, where do you see the demand is coming from for the dollar? Because one thing that we've been hearing about recently, or really throughout this whole year, more focus has been on the bond market, and yields continue to rise. So that means bonds continue to sell off. People are saying, oh, well, maybe this last little pullback in yields has been due to more of the foreign investors coming into the market, so then they need to buy dollars. But again, that's not looking at the whole picture of what's been happening this year. So where is the demand coming from for the dollar?
That's a good question. You know, it's one of the great things about the foreign exchange market, $6.6 trillion a day, daily, you know, average daily turnover. So we don't have a lot of transparency, but one place that does make it more transparent as far as participants is in the futures market. And as the year began, the speculators, sort of what the CFTC calls non-commercials, who don't have the underlying business need, were all short the U.S. dollar. And what we've been seeing in recent weeks, I'd say especially in the last 5 or 6 weeks, has been a big short covering. So that is, people were short the euro futures. They were long the futures. They've been liquidating those. In effect, then, short the dollar. And I think that a good part of what we've been seeing is a short covering squeeze in the dollar. Now, we've reached, as I mentioned, we reached new highs for the year, but think about what happened before the year began. In November and December, the dollar sold off pretty hard. And we are just approaching those levels. For example, that would be 116 in the euro, translates to around 94.30 or so in the dollar index. I think the same thing can generally be true about many of the currencies, that even though they've weakened here, the dollar hasn't recouped everything it lost in November and December yet. And so I think those are the kind of levels that people are looking at.
So what are the levels that you're watching more closely in terms of maybe this run petering out or any strong resistance levels that you see simply on the dollar index?
Yeah, so on the dollar index, you know, I had this, I thought that the dollar index had made a head and shoulders bottom by around the middle of January. And I thought that that projected up to about 92.75. Well, it's basically taken us 2 months to get there. And so, so sort of like now that we're there, what can we do? And I think that, you know, we pick these levels, not necessarily because they're the top, but because they're like reasonable to be achieved, like doable. And, you know, and so, we stalled just in front of 93. We did get past that, my target. We got up a bit further yesterday, and that becomes the key level now. Is about, we stopped just shy of 93. Now I'm thinking we could go back up to that 94.30 area if we can get above 93. We're consolidating today ahead of the weekend. Not that big of a deal, and we're consolidating above the 200-day moving average. That comes in around 92.60. And this is the first time the dollar index has been above its 200-day moving average since last May. So here I think we're, like, in the big picture, I think what's going on is this, I still want to see this as this upticks in the dollar index is largely corrective in nature. And, you know, we have to think about what does that mean? Well, think about what happened early last year when the pandemic first struck and how high the dollar index was. And that is to say, it was I have it hitting about 102.99 on March 20th last year. And so if we're going to correct, and so if the dollar sold off since then from that 102.99, we fell to 89.20 on January 6th. And so if we're going to correct, if that's the move that's behind us now, we're going to be correcting that. Where do we go? Well, the first retracement, that Fibonacci retracement, 38.2%, comes in there 94.50. So in a big, so if I'm right, this is corrective in nature. And the macro force behind this is divergence. The U.S. is on monetary policy, fiscal policy, the vaccine. The U.S. has been more aggressive than most of our trading partners and more aggressive than most of the large high-income countries. And so so I think that this divergence lifts the dollar, but it's not forever. It's not like this divergence is going to persist much longer. And by much longer, here's what I'm thinking. So Europe's a little bit slow on rolling out the vaccine, but starting next month, I expect to see it accelerate as they get a lot more deliveries of the vaccine. So I'm thinking, I had thought that late Q1, early Q2 was going to be the peak in divergence, but maybe it doesn't come till later in the quarter. At the same time, beginning probably in the summer and the fall, we're going to begin talking about the fiscal cliff in the U.S. as some of the fiscal stimulus, the checks would have run out, some of the unemployment extensions would be expiring, other programs will be expiring. And so I'm thinking that the second half of the year will be more of a convergence over divergence. And by that time, I think they will see the dollar index rise a bit more. But for me, the longer term view is still negative for the dollar. And it's because the price, how we're getting to get this extra growth this year is through deficits, budget deficit, large one, but more, not just that, budget deficit, because like who doesn't have a budget deficit? But the issue really is that by revving up the U.S. economy, the U.S. is going to be having, reporting larger, perhaps close to the record level current account deficits. So I'm thinking in the second half of this year, so the dollar index has more room on the divergence momentum carrying it further. But that by the second half of the year, we're going to begin talking about convergence and we're going to begin talking about the twin deficit problem in the U.S. And so the longer, the underlying bear market for the dollar can resume.
So longer term then, or even by the end of the year, mid this year, maybe, you are still bearish on the dollar. When it comes to this generally higher dollar from at least the beginning of this year impacting other markets, what do you think its impact currently has been on commodities?
Yeah, you know, there's, in some ways, right, because most of these commodities are priced in dollars, you'd expect that a higher dollar dampens commodities. And maybe we're beginning to see some rolling over, some weakness, some of the industrial metals especially. Oil have been volatile. On the other hand, I wonder about the mechanics here. Of course, say iron ore that China buys from Australia or soybeans that buys from Brazil, they'd be invoiced in dollars. But the underlying demand is from China. And I think that's partly the story of commodities lately, is that it seems that the strength, when the dollar was falling in November and December, and even into January, people were talking about the super cycle in commodities. And now that the dollar has gained a little bit better traction, people are questioning that a bit. But at the same time, I think the story is really about China. As commodity prices were rallying, it looked like China was not only importing it to build goods, but also importing to rebuild inventories. And so for me, I hear you that the dollar, the connection between the dollar and commodity prices is sort of mechanical because they're invoiced in dollars. But at the same time, don't lose sight of the demand side coming from China, especially as the factory of the world.
Okay. Hey, Mark, great chatting with you. Thank you for wrapping up this weekend show. Everybody, thank you for tuning in. And again, please go back through our website, kereport.com, listen to all those daily editorials and all those company updates and introductions I recorded this week. Mark, everyone else, I hope you all have a great rest of your weekend.
Thank you. Good luck to everybody.
For our upcoming appearance schedule, visit kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back in just a moment.
I tried other brands, but I came back to my sunshine.
For the best hot or cold pain relief, get the best. Get a Sunny Bay heating pad.
Sometimes life can be a pain in the neck, or back, or shoulder.
And the best relief for that pain is a Sunny Bay heating pad. Did you know that the American College of Physicians said that one of the best ways to treat muscle pain is heat therapy? Sunny Bay heating pads are handmade with high quality, can be used at home or at work, and have a lifetime 100% positive rating on both Amazon and Etsy.
Why take another pill?
Many people use our Sunny Bay heating pads alone and got rid of the neck pain.
Long distance travel or long hours in front of a computer can take its toll on your body.
Our homegrown small business tries to help people just like us. That's why we design and test our handmade products with great care before we introduce them to the public. You can easily find Sunny Bay heating pads on Amazon. Just go to Amazon.com and search for Sunny Bay heating pads.
Have you ever thought about turning your Glock, XD family, or 1911 handgun into a semi-automatic carbine? It only takes about 30 seconds. The MechTech Carbine Upper is classified as an accessory and can be delivered right to your doorstep with no FFL or background check required. It's the world's most versatile pistol accessory. Build your custom upper today. Simply go to handgunconversion.com. That's handgunconversion.com.
Complement your health with hemp-derived cannabinoid oil. We've always believed that the closer to Earth, the better it is for our bodies. Our hemp-derived cannabinoid oil is phytocannabinoid-rich, full-spectrum, and organically grown. Finally, hemp made easy, clean, and effective. GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203. That's right, we cut through the red tape. It's now available at GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203.